show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Oh, man, we got a lot of stuff to get to this hour. We will see what happens. But I welcome you back to the program. Another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. Some lines are open right now and ready to team up again. Try to answer all your money questions. I did say this. There is a whole lot to cover this hour, as there usually is. So we'll get right to it. Phone calls and emails come first. In fact, your phone calls will come first. We have some people on hold. We will talk to them in just about 60 seconds. I want to remind you, you can reach us directly here in the studio by calling us. Our in-studio hotline, which just happens to be 877-PLANNER. That's our caller line, 877-752-6637. It spells out PLANNER, which is what we do on this program. You can also send your emails to us. WealthEd.com is our website, right there at the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. I'll tell you this, we will get to at least one or two of those emails this hour, all right? Did you hear the word promise? No, but we're going to try. You can also get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air. You can talk to an advisor about your specific situation. You can set up a face-to-face meeting, or you can just ask a few questions about your own situation, whatever. And you can do so just by calling Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number, 800-644-1150. You got Brain Trust advisors standing by to talk to you. We've told you for years and years that everyone's situation is different, and we mean it. What's suitable for one person may not be suitable for you, and that's why you should call the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Have them go over your plans, your goals, and your individual situation. Once again, their number, 800-644-1150. On the air, 877-PLANNER. And then last hour, we're going to cover it this hour. Last hour, we did not get to that whole question of what do you do if you get a bonus and it pushes you into the next tax bracket. Haven't forgotten about that. We will talk about that. Among other things, finish talking a little bit about tax brackets. Maybe we cover more than just a little bit that we did. But we're going to take some calls first. 877-PLANNER. Sam, first up this hour in Houston, Texas. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Ray. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. How can we help you today?
Okay, so I'm calling about 1098-T and 1099-Q forms. So the situation is this. My son had a job last year tutoring. He just started college as a freshman. He made income that's around $5,500, so less than the $6,300 threshold. So I don't think he has to file his taxes. We are claiming him as a dependent. Mm-hmm. We've got a 1098-T from the college, and we've got a whole bunch of 1099-Qs from the 529 plans that are paid out for his educational expenses.
Right.
The question is, am I required to file those forms? That's the first question. Second is, the 1098-T does not match the amounts on the 1099-Q. The 1099-Q is more because we paid it out for both the fall and the spring semester back in December.
Right. The 1098-T comes from the educational institution. It's basically what they billed you and what was paid for, what they received as payment, or what they billed you for, the cost of the education. The 1099-Q is what the 529 or the Coverdell Education Savings Account sent you in total. So they're not going to match in most cases because what was billed and what was paid may be two different things. And you need to, and you don't file them with your tax return, but the IRS already has copies of them that they're matching up with your tax return. And you use it to file your tax return to determine how much, if any, of the 1099 money was taxable and whether or not you're going to get any credits through any other source. So these forms are informational to you. You put them into the right slots on the right portion of the right form on the tax return to show that it was either a non-taxable distribution because of qualified higher education expenses, or how much of it was taxable or non-taxable, how much of it was basis coming out of the 529s. This is all done by the accountant, or hopefully all done by the tax program that you're using. I would sure hate to have to do this by hand, because you'd have to know which forms to use. Thankfully, accountants do, and hopefully the tax program does. But they won't match. And so you've got to then look into it and say, okay, I paid this. The 1098-T only shows what was billed for the year, not necessarily what was paid for the year. And you do have to reconcile that on your tax return.
Okay, so in my case, just to put rough numbers, the 1098T shows 20,000, which is, I believe, the only tuition part. This is a private school. And the 1099, the queues between the three forms are about, 45,000, right?
So right now,
there's a big discrepancy there. But yeah, as long as I keep records, I guess I can prove to the IRS that these are used for the education.
Did you pay $45,000 worth of higher education expenses in calendar year 2015?
Yes, because the spring bill that was due on January 10th, we paid it out in December. So the 529 plan sent us out that 1099-Q because it was paid out in December. These guys received it in January, the school.
So they'll show it on a 2016, but you won't have a corresponding distribution for 16.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that still covers it because it's being paid within a timely manner for the bills, and the school wants the money up front anyway, right? So it's all a matter of accounting for it, and this is why I didn't become an accountant. God bless those that did.
Well, the good news is the TurboTax. I'm using TurboTax, so there is a plug for TurboTax. But my refund is not affected once I put the amount. So that's the good news. Even though it did show me what you're talking about, the taxable income for some amount and things like that. And I do have all the records. The bigger question I have is, does my son need to file a separate return?
Well, he may or may not. When he was working, did they withhold any income tax from the checks when he was receiving his checks?
No, only Social Security, only the FICA part.
Yeah, he's not getting that back. As long as he made less than the $6,300, actually a little bit more, he does not have to file unless he would get some kind of a refund or something from that nature. He's not eligible for any credits. He's not eligible for a refund because he didn't withhold anything. So there's no reason to file that I can think of.
Okay. And I don't need to report his income on our joint.
No, this is not part of the kiddie tax.
As a dependent.
No, this is not part of the kiddie tax. The kiddie tax is only unearned income, investment income, things of that nature. Earned income is never reported on the parent's return.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much. I think my tax return is complete, thanks to you guys.
Well, good, Sam. I appreciate that. And I hope you come and see us there in Houston this Saturday if you can get away, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks again, guys. Great show. Thanks again.
Thank you for the call, Sam. Don't forget, there's a workshop coming up in Saturday, and you'll be talking about a lot of this stuff. Not necessarily the forms, forms, but
paperwork is
But strategy, things like that. That's right. If you want to join us, by the way, go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com, this Saturday, April 9th in Houston, Texas. All right. There are more, too. We have a couple more coming up here before the end of the month. Let's get to the next call. We can get started anyway. Let's go to Lee in Las Vegas. Hello, Lee.
Hi, John and Rick. I appreciate you taking my call. I started doing my Roth conversions to cut down my RMDs when I turned 70 and a half.
Uh-huh.
First year I've done it. I'm filling out the 8606 form, but it's the first time I've converted. Circumvent part one and go to part two, and then I took out 20,000, but they're asking for what my basis is. I don't quite understand.
They're asking for the basis in your traditional IRA, not the Roth IRA.
They want the full amount of whatever the basis was?
No, the basis in an IRA has nothing to do with the investments or any of that nature. It's purely, have you ever made an after-tax contribution to your IRA?
After-tax?
Have you ever made a contribution to the traditional IRA that you did not deduct or that did not come from a
No, I've always deducted them.
Okay, then your basis is zero.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to confirm that with you.
Right. They're looking for after-tax money in the traditional IRA because when we make a distribution, whether we make a distribution to ourselves because we want to spend the money, required minimum distribution, or whether we convert money to a Roth IRA, they're looking for taking some of the after-tax money and moving it across with the rest of the pre-tax money. You have to do a proration. But that's only if you have any after-tax money in the IRA. Otherwise, you have a zero basis.
Oh, okay. I just want to confirm that because you always want to be in compliance with the IRS. Otherwise, they send you some lovely letters.
Oh, yeah, that's lovely. Never fun.
Your idea of lovely and my idea of lovely are very different.
Well, I think he knows. I think we know what he's...
I think we're on the same page.
Yes, I think we're absolutely on the same page, Lee.
Yeah, I appreciate the information. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Oh, the Form 8606.
Well, and there are some people who are actually, you know, in a figurative sense, married to that form.
Well, forever. If they have after-tax money in their IRAs.
And they're, yes.
Unless you want to pay taxes again on that after-tax money, mm-hmm. you have to file 8606 to show that at least a portion of the distribution or conversion is after-tax money.
And even if you pass away before you reach required minimum distribution age and you never take any money out of those IRAs.
Your kids.
Your heirs. Your heirs are going to have to deal with the same thing. So it helps from a planning standpoint to know exactly what that is. Okay. They should change the laws. That's all.
Make everything tax-free?
Well, not necessarily, but let's separate the pre-tax from the post-tax. They're not going to do it. Okay, 877-PLANNER. Email's coming up. We got a whole bunch of stuff. We'll figure it out when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean and the professor talking to you about your money, about your taxes, about anything that happens to be on your mind. And maybe taxes are on your mind. We have taxes coming up. Aren't they due somewhat soon?
It's coming down to the critical points here. We've got, a little over a week left?
Yeah, you got, a week, 12 days, roughly.
Okay.
Don't forget,
almost
it's due
2 weeks, I forgot.
It's due on the 18th this year. So you really have that whole weekend if you're,
Wrong.
If you're like me and you wind up owing, and just wait. Do it last minute.
Well, do the return ahead of time.
Well,
but then send them the check at the last minute.
And
do it snail mail.
Do it. Go in and find, if you can find post offices that are doing that whole midnight thing again.
Remember when people would line up around the blocks to have that
postmark? We used to do radio remotes late at night on April 15th or whenever.
At
the main post office in town, and you would have police officers there, and they'd have people out there handing out cookies and
Well, no wonder we did a remote then.
Well, of course, we're there if there's free food. But I remember doing that down there, and you're on the air at 11:30 at night,
and the line just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Antsy out there because I'm really cutting it close now. Can we get people moving? But yeah,
did they take a big sign out and put it on the back of a car that says this is the last car by midnight?
No, they haven't done that because once it hits 12:01, they legally cannot stamp it as they can't say everybody who's in the gate at this point is going to get it no matter what time. It doesn't work that way. Anyway, so taxes are due, so people are thinking about that if you have questions on that. In fact, speaking of taxes, I didn't get to this in a previous hour, so I'm going to bring this up now. The question came up. Let's say you are in the 15% bracket, but boy, you're right up against the top. Let's say you're making $74,500, which puts you within, a tick or two of the top edge of the 15% bracket. And then your boss gives you a bonus at the end of the year. And let's say your bonus is, what do you want to make it? $1,000, $2,000?
Well,
does it matter?
We could make it $1,000. I mean,
let's make it $1,000 because at that point, your $1,000 bonus now moves you. Yeah, I guess you have to be single in this case, right?
Well, no, not at $74,000. That's the top of the married.
That's the married. Okay,
that's the married
front
of the joint.
That's your realm. Okay, so you're now my $1,000 bonus is now putting me into the 25% bracket. And so the question was, should I not take it? Because doggone it, now it's going to wind up costing me. Now all my income is going to be taxed at 25% thanks to this little $1,000 bonus putting me over the top of the next bracket. And we're here to tell you that that's really not the case. Professor Plum, let's see if we can make this simple.
Well, what they're looking at is even in that $75,000, let's just say the cutoff is a flat $75,000. Married couple filing a joint return, their taxable income, after all deductions and exemptions and everything else is taken off the top, they have a taxable income of $75,000. And for our example here, that is the very top of the 15% bracket. It's pretty close anyway, but we'll just use it for example. And they're saying, well, that means I'm in the 15% bracket, right? So if we took $75,000, 0.15, that means that my tax would be $11,250 because I'm in the 15% bracket. So all of that $75,000 is in the 15% bracket. It is all taxable income. We've already gotten rid of all the deductions. The answer is no, that's not your tax bill. Because the first, call it $18,000, is in the 10% bracket. So you're not at the $11,000 number anyway. Now, what the fear is that if I go up $1,000, I go into the 25% tax bracket. And that statement is true. You do go into the 25% income tax bracket. But the worry is that that $76,000, $75,000 originally plus the new $1,000, let's see, $76,000, 0.25, now my tax bill goes up to $19,000. I got an extra $1,000 and my tax bill went from $11,000 to $19,000.
I'm losing money.
I'm losing money by taking this bonus. That's not how it works. Your tax bill for that new $1,000, which is 100% in the 25% bracket, it's the only income you have in the 25% bracket, and that's key. It's the only income you have in the 25% bracket. The rest of the income's still in the 15 and the 10. You still pay the 10% on the first $18,000, the 15% on the next $57,000, $58,000, whatever it is. You are only in the 25% tax bracket for that last $1,000. Your tax bill went up by $250. Now, we're only talking federal here. There may be a state tax there too, so we're just talking the federal side of it. So my taxes went up by $250. I get to still keep $750 out of that $1,000 bonus. It doesn't go retroactive. It doesn't reassess the
every
tax.
Dollar from dollar one. It doesn't work that
it
way.
It doesn't change the tax on that first $18,000. It doesn't change the tax on the next block, $57,000. That still has the exact same tax as it had before. It's only the new money that's in that 25% tax bracket that gets the 25% bill.
Right. So the fact that you're over, your bonus puts you roughly $1,000 over.
Into the 20. I'm in the 25% bracket.
Only what's above in this example.
The threshold, 75,000.
The threshold of 75,000 is taxed at that level.
Right.
All the new money you make after that, yes, will be taxed at 25%.
Now, there are some thresholds that will seem like a higher tax bracket. If I'm getting into the area where I start losing the child tax credit, I have some kids under the age of 17 at home, and I get into the phase out of my child tax credit, my tax bill will start going up more than the 25% bracket that I'm in. That next $1,000 of income, yeah, I'm taxed at 25%, but I also lose a little bit of my tax credit. So my bill goes up, but it doesn't go up by $1,000. So there are some phase outs that hurt more than just changing brackets. But that has to do with the loss of a credit, the loss of the retirement savers credit, the loss of the child tax credit, and some other areas. And so we do have to look at that. And now for seniors, for people that are retired, that extra $1,000 could actually stay in the same 15% bracket, but my tax bill goes up by more because of the impact on the Social Security that I'm receiving. So there's lots of little problems within the brackets themselves that aren't related necessarily to the bracket. They're related to your income and the loss of something else besides the bracket. But we don't go retroactive on the brackets.
No, and I think that's the basic point that really needs to be understood here. Because again, I have heard people say this over and over. I'm making $80,000 and, 25%, what's it? Let's say.
Well, what they'll also say is that I'm taxed at a much higher level. Yeah, I'm on the 25% bracket, 15% bracket, but that $10,000 bonus, they're going to tax me at 50%. I'm going to lose a whole bunch of it to taxes. No, they're going to withhold more.
Well, and that's another issue, too. That's another
story. And that's
story.
Where people get confused.
If for some reason you did, let's say you got a $10,000 bonus, 1 month at the end of the year, and you say, "Great, I'm getting a $10,000 bonus because I'm single and I only make 40 grand a year. This is really going to help." And you look at this bonus, and all of a sudden it's being taxed. They take 25% of it out. Actually,
they'll take
more than
that.
They
take significantly more. I mean, especially and it goes by how much you get paid too.
Right.
Once a month, once a week. The person that gets paid once a week is going to have a much higher withholding on that bonus than somebody who gets paid once a month.
And the reason is because the way they withhold out of the bonus is as if you made that every single pay period.
Right.
And so they're trying to withhold based on you paying
making that every
taxes.
Pay period.
Right. It's just the way it is. You'll get it back more than likely. You'll probably
most
have
of it.
Overpaid. Yes. All right, 877-PLANNER. I hope that explained it. If not, call us. Lines open right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Some news coming up and a few other things when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money. We'll be doing so until the top of the hour, so get your phone calls in now. We do have a couple of lines open. 877-PLANNER, our number, 877-752-6637. In just a little bit, after we take a couple of calls, I want to make time for this if we can. On these, I mentioned that the Department of Labor has issued these new fiduciary rules, which can actually be a very good thing. But there are some who would say that, you know, it either doesn't do anything, or if you happen to not be a very ethical type of person, you could say it's going to ruin my business, or I got to find somewhere else, some way else to, you know, make recommendations to people that aren't right for them.
This is another one of those full employment acts for attorneys.
That's right. Exactly. They're going to love this. So anyway, we'll talk about that at some point before the top of the hour. I can almost guarantee you. But we've got a lot of phone calls to get to and emails, et cetera, as well. Okay, let's move along to Mike in Las Vegas up next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, John and Rick. Yeah, hi. I'm 52 years old, and I retired in 2014 after 28 years in federal law enforcement due to a motorcycle accident that I had.
Oh.
So I'm also collecting additional to my federal pension, Social Security disability. And my wife went back to work in 2015, and during the time that she worked in 2015, she contributed around $4,000 to a 401k, a company-sponsored 401k plan.
Okay.
And so now I'm sitting down doing my taxes, and I don't want to pay the taxes that it shows that I owe. And so I'm trying to figure out how much between the two of us we can contribute to retirement plans, IRAs, 401ks.
Well, you can't at this time do any 401k contributions for 2015.
No matchup. No, I can't, like,
it's done.
$4,000, I can't go up to the, like, additional $14,000. I can't pay that.
No. The only way to get money into the 401k is they take it out of her paycheck. And if they take it out of her paycheck now, it's a 2016 contribution. Now, if you look at your adjusted gross income, basically the bottom of the first page of your 1040, what is your adjusted gross income? How much household income is there? What are you guys doing here?
Probably around $125,000.
Okay.
And that's including my Social Security disability.
Right, the portion of it that's taxable, which is perfect. And so what you can do, you did not work at all during 2015, which means that you were not a participant on the contribution side of any kind of retirement account. You can have a deductible, traditional, basically a spousal IRA. So you could put in your 52, you can put in $6,500 into a traditional IRA, as long as you do it in the next couple days here, between now and when you have to file your return. So you can do $6,500. Your wife is a member of a 401k, and you are at the upper reaches of the ability, 98 to 100 years. If you're at 120, 130, if you're at 130, you're over the limit. She will not be able to do any type of deduction. So it's a moving target here, but given the numbers that you're talking about, you're well within the limits. You definitely can do $6,500 of a tax-deductible traditional spousal IRA. She is suspect whether she can put any in, depending upon what the actual bottom line number is on the adjusted gross income.
Okay, and assuming we're okay with the numbers, she can put in another $6,500 into her IRA?
She may not be able to deduct it, though. There's a limit. Now, there's two different limits. One is for the person that is covered. I'm assuming you file a joint return, right?
Yes.
There is a limit for the person that is covered by a retirement plan. She's contributing. She's a participant in a retirement plan. And there's a separate limit for a person who is not part of a retirement plan. Receiving a pension is not part of this. It's being able to contribute to one is what we're talking about. Your limit is $183,000. You're well within those limits. Her limit is like 98 to 118. You said you were in the 120 range. So if you're at 120, she can't deduct it. If for some reason it goes lower than that and you were off by a little bit, she may be able to get some amount of deduction. So that's why I said her ability to put money into a deductible traditional IRA is suspect.
I understand. Okay. And how would I, like, I go to a financial planner? Or, I mean, how do I get the $6,500 into a
You can call a brokerage company. You can go online. You can go to your local bank, credit union. Any place that manages or maintains IRAs, you can open up an IRA, either write them a check or transfer the money from your checking account into the account and get it done by April 18th.
Okay. Okay, very good.
Okay.
I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
All right, Mike, thank you. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I have more to say on this. I want to get to at least one more question here before the top of the hour. But there are rules with regard to you can put money in an IRA. As long as you have a job, you can put money in an IRA. The question is, can you deduct it or not?
Right.
And it all has to do with, number one, you hit it?
I got it. I got the right number.
So you were just guessing.
It was a fairly educated guess.
Well, that's what I thought, yes.
But they do typically change the limits every year. I knew the upper limit because it's the same as the Roth IRA limit for a married couple.
183
to 193 for 2015. But I always forget the lower limit for the covered spouse in a married filing joint return. Last year it was $98,000 to $118,000, meaning if you make less than $98,000, adjusted gross income, married couple filing a joint return, even if you're covered by a retirement plan at work, you can contribute to a deductible traditional IRA. If you're over $118,000, you cannot deduct the contribution to your traditional IRA. If you're a married person filing a joint return, you are covered by a retirement plan. If you're in between those, it's a percentage. I mean, you lose the ability to make the deduction. He said 120, which is over the 118, so that means that she cannot deduct it. But for the person in the marriage that is not covered by a retirement plan at work, and I mentioned this earlier, it's not that you're receiving a pension. It's not that you retired and you're receiving money from your IRAs, your 401ks. It's not that you've never had one. It's just that you're not eligible to participate in one now. No new money is going into the plan for you now during this tax return.
Or you're just not doing it.
Yeah, but also the company's not doing it. Yeah, if the company's putting money in or you're putting money in, then you are covered by a plan.
Yeah.
So if you're not covered by a retirement plan, but your spouse is, the phase out for being able to make a contribution, a deductible traditional IRA contribution, is $183,000 for last year.
Same as Roth IRAs.
It's $184,000 this year for 2016. So
yeah.
He can make a deductible contribution. She probably cannot.
Okay. If you have questions on this, give us a call. All right, 877-PLANNER. I had a call back. Martin, actually, who had called earlier. I think Martin has another question, so we'll move you up again. Martin, hey, what's up?
Yeah, it's going. One more question. I was listening to you about that tax bracket and so on, about, 15, 20%, 25%?
Right.
And I was just looking on actually at the tax table over there for the 1040. And you're saying that that's already figured out as far as the percentage-wise with these tax table brackets?
If you're looking in the instruction pamphlet that's a couple hundred pages long for a tax return, and it's got it all blocked out by, income level, I think it goes by $500 increments or so, and then it's got, single, head of household, married filing joint, things like that. It's got columns. That is telling you the tax on that income. The calculation has already been done for you. They've already looked at X amount of it was at the 10% bracket, X amount of it's at the 25 or 15% bracket and such. So the calculation is all done behind the scenes on that number. They're just telling you that at $40,000 married filing a joint return, the tax is X. That already has assumed that the first $18,490 or whatever it was taxed at the 10% bracket and the remainder was taxed at the 15% bracket. The result was the number on the page.
Okay, I see what you're saying, because I was just jotting some numbers down too and trying to see what the amount was, and my figure came out different than what's on the page here. Where can you go to where you talked about, you said it's a tax table where you can, where it's...
Right, you can Google, I guess that's a verb nowadays.
Yes,
you can search on the internet for 2015 tax brackets, 2016 tax brackets, and you'll be able to pull up where the brackets are. There's lots of different places that issue out multiple different types of sheets that have all the brackets on it, the retirement income phase outs, the Social Security phase out, taxation issues, education phase outs, credits, and things like that. So you can, there's lots of tax reference guides. You can call them 2015 tax reference guide, 2016 tax reference guide. Search for one of those and it'll give you the specific brackets, how much is available in each bracket.
Okay, and the tax bracket. And them numbers will show up different than this book that I'm looking from.
Well, it shouldn't. I mean, there may be a slight, you know, dollar or two difference because they're doing blocks of income rather than a specific dollar amount. And so you may have a very slight difference in that, but it shouldn't be off by more than a couple of bucks because of the rounding. If it's off by a couple of bucks, you're probably doing the calculation wrong. You're using the wrong input to get the tax. You're using gross income instead of taxable income or something of that nature.
Yeah, hey, Martin, I got to take a break, so maybe we can talk to you more off the air if you have some more questions on this. But it's complicated stuff, and that's why we're here. We're here to answer your questions, whether it's on taxes or strategy or anything else related to money. Let's put it that way. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. A couple of lines open and only a couple minutes left to get your calls in right here on Buckets Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, talking about your money, as we've done all day. Taxes have been on a lot of people's minds, as you might have guessed, and they are all year long. I mean, taxes. When can you ever get away from taxes? You can't. So we'll have a couple of follow-ups here in just a little bit. I want to remind you that coming up on the program tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the importance of tax location. Tax location. You say, well, what does that mean? I don't know. Can you explain what that means in like 10 words or less?
What type of an account you're buying an investment in has an impact on the taxes that you're going to pay,
exactly,
either now or in the future.
Okay, there you go. I didn't even count how many words, but that was perfect. That's the way it is. Some assets are taxed at a capital rate, capital gains rate, or losses, or whatever you have. You have ordinary rates, which are higher than the capital rates. And depending on where you happen to put some of your assets, it's a lot like asset location. So we'll be talking about that. It could have an effect on your taxes. Okay, 877-PLANNER, and we'll get to a couple of emails in just a moment. Trivia for today, just because we can. This is from Graves and Company. Whoa. Did you know this? Did you have any clue, Professor Plum, that falling oil prices caused the layoffs of 258,000 workers in the oil and gas industry, that's globally, during calendar year 2015, including 114,000 U.S. of A-ans.
Actually, I would have thought the number would have been higher.
Globally and here in America?
I'm not worried about globally. I'm worried about the U.S., you know, employment issue. And there's a lot of people that are, I guess that's direct with oil. There was a lot of people that laid off indirectly, but I would have, because of the number of rigs shutting down, mm-hmm, the number of everything that was shutting down, I would have expected it to be higher. But obviously, that's why
That's what they said. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of squawking, of course, among people.
Still a big number.
It is. Oil and gas industry talking about how, you know, it's hurting. I can think of very few things where you have, based on prices, commodity prices, stocks, bonds, and all that stuff, where when one side is winning, there isn't a portion of some other side that's losing. I mean,
yeah.
In many ways, it can be something of a zero-sum game. So while I can empathize with them, I do think that overall lower gasoline and oil prices have helped the economy. I think without that, if we haven't had that, if we had gas prices the way they would have, they were, you know, when gas was 100, when
other areas would have been laying off.
Yeah, exactly. And you wind up with all kinds of problems. So, okay, let's see. 877-PLANNER. Now, Professor Plum, you did some math. Earlier we had a caller from a fellow by the name of Martin.
Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas, who was asking about various different things with regards to the tax tables that you were referring to, tax brackets.
Well, we were talking about brackets and the fact that some of the money is taxed at one bracket, other portions are brackets. You may have multiple calculations to calculate your tax bracket. But in the IRS booklet that some people still get, I didn't get one this year, but you know, that big 125-page booklet, there is a table in the back of it that says if your income is X, your tax You know, they look at the difference, single, married filing jointly, married filing separately, and so on. If your income is this, your tax is that. Well, they don't go by every dollar amount. They break it into blocks of $50 increments. So if your income, I was looking it up, if your income is $40,000 to $40,050, now we're talking about your taxable income, that your tax is this amount of money. And when Martin said he did the calculation, he came up with a completely different answer than what the table's given him. Well, there's something going on in the calculation then, because the table does give you the right answer. Now, I just went through and did it at $40,000. When I did $40,000, I came up $4 less than what the table says. But that's because the table is using a $50 spread. And if you use the exact midpoint of that spread, it'll be the exact dollar amount that is shown on the issue. So if you want to save a couple bucks and you're on the low side of the spread of $50, do the exact tax calculation versus the table. If you're on the high side of the spread,
then use
what the table says.
Yeah.
Now, the table doesn't go on forever. It's only for it's not for the higher wage people. I can't remember how high it goes.
Okay. I think if you use some tax software, it automatically uses the table version too. So I don't know. I don't know for sure. All right, we got to get to at least one more call before the top of the hour. 877 Planner.
Yeah, the table only goes to 98,000.
Yeah, it stops there. Roger is next up in Houston, Texas. Hi, Roger.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I've got a question about the upcoming May 1st changes in Social Security. I was born in August of 1943. My wife born in August of 44. And we've been taking Social Security benefits since we were 62 and a half.
Right.
Does this change in the law have any effect on me whatsoever?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I didn't think it did.
No,
I just wanted to be sure.
You're already taking. You're already past 70. It has absolutely no impact on you or your spouse.
Yeah, you had the double foresight of being born, you know, prior to 1954, and what's age 66? Where does that put you? 1950. 1949, something like that. Roger, you happen to be old enough where none of this actually affects you. Neither one of you.
Yeah, I thought that was the case, but I wanted to run it by you guys because y'all have been a great source of information through the years.
Well, yes. Well, we appreciate that, Roger. Does that help you out?
Yeah, it did very much so, and really enjoy your program.
Well, thank you, Roger. Thank you for the call and the nice words.
Goodbye.
All right, we appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah, again, I should mention, too, that we have a guide, a downloadable guide that you can get on our Facebook page. If you go to our Facebook page, just search Wealth Ed, WEALTH, Wealth Ed, as in wealth education. Big changes coming. Actually, they're already here, to Social Security. That's what it's called. You can download the link there at the main part of the page. Now, once again, Professor Plum, most people that this is going to affect or has affected, it's already gone past.
There's a very small set of people that need to do something by April 29th. And if you're in this small set of people that need to do something by April 29th, do it today. And that set is somebody who is full retirement age this month or before, who wants to wait until their age 70 time horizon to take their own benefit, but also wants a spouse to take a benefit from their work record before they get to 70. If that's the case, you better file and suspend in the next couple days. Because if you file and suspend after April 29th, nobody else can take a benefit from your work record until you actually start your benefit.
Yeah, and those are the people that it affects. And if you're older, you don't have any problem doing this at all. Okay, we're out of time. If you need the brain trust, or if you want to talk to Professor Plum about anything we talk about on this program, you can call anybody at Lucia Capital Group, including the professor, at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.